everybody. My name's Jody White, and this is the Lumieres podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I'll give you a brief background to what it is and what it's about. I started it back in January 2017. I realized I had a network of all sorts of friends and friends of friends doing weird and wonderful things in the world, and I wanted to celebrate them. And I thought a really nice way of doing that would be to go out and record interviews with them, often in their own homes. One of the things about this podcast is I never record over the internet. It's only an in-person show. So you can imagine the past couple of years have been a little bit tricky for getting together in the room, especially 2020, 2021, for obvious reasons. And we're back. There's a new wave of energy carrying this forward. I've got a series of excellent episodes with some fascinating people recorded. A few more to do, but we'll be putting them out now weekly. I was lucky enough to go up to North Wales back at the end of 2022 and record several podcasts, actually, which will be coming out as part of this series. We have storyteller par excellence and founder of Kai Mabon, magical retreat space center with natural building and all sorts of amazing courses and things they host there. It's been around for a while and it has quite a fascinating backstory, as does the life of Eric himself. Also, while I was there, I recorded an interview with my friend Owen Shears. He records music under the name Kenevan, and his album Dylan Afon was nominated for several awards and is a wonderful piece of music based around his reimaginings of a series of old Welsh folk songs. So lots to come. I hope you're excited to listen. And if you enjoy the episodes, you can now support me directly via Patreon. The link is patreon.com/JodyWhite. That's JodyWhite. And just for a few pounds a month, you can support me making this podcast. This isn't my full-time job. I don't receive any income from it, but there are unavoidable costs that come along with it, such as travel and hosting fees, the equipment and my time spent editing. So if you get something from this podcast, then giving a little bit back financially helps me continue to do it. That link again is patreon.com/JodyWhite. And there's also a super supporter tier on there. There'll be special bonus things on there, like I'm going to do bonus podcasts on there. And there'll be behind the scenes content as well. Also, it would be remiss of me not to mention that despite the podcast being on hiatus the last few years, I was able to finish my book, my first book, which is now out after a very successful crowdfunder campaign. We raised over £5,000, was able to give a good chunk of money to Leukemia Care and to Young Lives Versus Cancer. And we had over 100 backers. And the book went on general release in January last year. I'll be talking more about that soon, as I'm doing a couple of local to the Welsh Borders book reading events in the spring. But for now, I'll just say, if you're interested in finding out more about my book, Chimera, Living Through Leukemia, a Memoir, you can go to jodywhite.co.uk/chimera. That's C-H-I-M-E-R-A, Chimera. And you can find out why it's got 26, count them, 26 five-star reviews on Amazon. But today for you, to celebrate the first of this new run of episodes of the Lumieres podcast in 2023, we're still here just about 6 years later. Thank you for sticking with me if you've been listening since the start. If you're new, I hope you stick around and I really hope you enjoy and get something from these podcasts. My guest on the very first of these new episodes is Danny Tonks. Danny is a somatic coach, a movement teacher, and a creative consultant. Her mission statement is to facilitate and design playful, powerful, and pleasurable spaces for transformation, connection, and empowerment. She wants to connect people to their embodied essence so they may live a freer, fuller life. And Danny is a force of nature. I've been lucky enough to do an online version of one of her core workshops called The Body Knows during the lockdowns, which was super powerful, just what I needed at the time. and actually worked really well as a group over the internet. So I talked to Dani, I went to Bristol, and we talked about her journey to get to where she is as a somatic coach and movement teacher today. And she was very trusting to open up and share with me her journey and the difficulties that she's faced along the way and how that has informed who she is and what she does. So once again, thank you so much for listening and choosing to share your time with me. And I do hope you enjoy this conversation with Dani. There'll be more episodes to come, as I've mentioned. I'll be back at the end with some brief thank yous, and until next time, please enjoy. Hi, Dani.
Hi.
Thank you for sharing your time with me this afternoon. Very privileged. Before we start talking, I thought it would be nice to allow people listening to drop into a deeper listening space. Mm. Is there anything you feel like you could share in terms of a short exercise?
Yeah, absolutely. My heart is all racing now after we did our little mini vocal exercise.
BPM's up.
Okay. I'd love to. So one of my favourite mini practices that I like to do, and anyone can do it, and that's sort of the joy about this one, is, and it's called Orientation to Pleasure Practice. And it's by a guy called Stephen Hoskins, and he is the founder of Organic Intelligence, if anyone wants to look it up. And I learned this practice through my training with the Somatic School. And alongside the Somatic School, there's a course called Organic Intelligence for Coaches. So without explaining any more, let's go ahead.
Okay.
So just getting in a comfortable seated or standing position. Make any final little adjustments that you need to do to get comfortable. And just placing a hand on your heart and a hand on your belly. And just taking a moment to tune into your interoception, the inner workings of your body. So feeling your heart beating, your belly rise and fall within each inhale and exhale of breath. And as you're doing this, just letting your eyes wander around the space that you're in with the same sense of ease and gentle curiosity as you would do if you were walking around a woodland or a park. And there's no rush. Just letting the eyes gently wander around. And as you're doing this, you may feel the need to sigh or swallow. And know that this is perfectly normal. These sighs and these swallows and these yawns are all signals from the body, letting us know that we're feeling a little bit more comfortable and safe in the space. And to add a little bit extra onto this practice, see if you can orientate to the things that feel enjoyable, nourishing, to see, even if it's just a little bit. So the flicker of light, the texture of a fabric, the detail of a leaf. And then maybe bringing your eyes to an object, just resting for a moment, and to continue noticing what's enjoyable or nourishing about this thing. And having a little conversation through the body, through the non-verbal realm, and notice how your body responds to this thing. So as I'm looking at a plant in my living room, I'm noticing my breath change and feeling a sense of groundedness in my sitting bones. And tuning into that sense of ease as I orientate to this plant. And now letting go of that object. And again, letting your eyes wander back into the space. And if there's any other little thoughts that want to pop on in, once you've acknowledged that and noticed that, coming back to this sensation of orientating to pleasure or little pockets of joy. And that's the resource. That's the resource in this moment. And if you like, you can soften the gaze or close down the eyes, just for a moment to go inward. A moment just to check in. Hello, heart. Hello, belly. And maybe just thinking and feeling into one little thing that you are grateful for about your body. And it could be something small. One little thing. So I'm grateful for my breath guiding me, breathing life into my body. And very gently creating some movement in the feet and in the hands and in the face. And opening up the eyes. Looking around the space. And here we are back in the room. I sometimes like to do a little palate cleanse after a practice.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
That's great. So as you might be able to tell if you didn't already know, Danny works a lot with the body. How would you describe your work, the work that you do, Danny? An overview of the kind of work that you do.
That's a great question. So I use play and movement as tools for self-transformation, empowerment and confidence, and supporting people to come back home to their bodies. And I like to describe my approach as playful, pleasurable and powerful. And it's very practical. It's a practical, process-orientated approach for folks to, come back in tune with their body, the whole of themselves, actually. You know, the mind is part of the body, the voice is part of the body, the body is the body.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And you do this through several different offerings, don't you, currently? You do all sorts of courses, which I know you do, The Body Knows, which I've done, and is great, and you should totally do. And you teach in person, don't you? And at festivals and all sorts of things. It's quite a mixed bag, isn't it? It's all sorts of approaches, but all coming from, like you say, that place of empowerment, embodiment.
It's really nice to hear you say that, like these different approaches, these different realms that where I find myself in, either it be at a festival doing a wild play lab, which may be between 30 to 100 people doing this like ridiculous, absurd, silly, playful pot to working one-to-one with people in my private clinic or practice at Elevate Studio Bristol, which has a different quality and flavour. And it's a radical dance, actually, that I'm finding myself in. Sometimes I work with corporate clients as well. And so it's feeling into what parts of myself should I show to the world. And what I'm noticing is that it's a different language to each person. And so the body knows. So coming back to the body knows, is a course I developed about 4 years ago now. It was originally designed to be in person. So the first couple were in person. And then the pandemic happened, and like many, like everyone, we had to think creatively in working online, right? And from home.
And adapt.
And adapt, yeah. And it really put my philosophy about play into practice. You know, play is about being in a in an unknown space sometimes and not really knowing what's going to happen. And so, yeah, it's just funny to think back to that time, actually. It feels so long ago now.
Like doesn't it?
Yeah, like everyone trying to figure out, how the hell does Zoom work and what do we do and how is this going to work? Like,
how do I translate in person to over the webcam?
And is that even possible? And what I learned is that it is. Because somatic work, embodiment work, because you're working with the body, through your body, in the comfort of your own home, I learned that it is possible. And particularly as a somatic coach, which is what one of the things that I do is there's no physical contact. That there can be sometimes that is available for a client one-to-one, but mostly it isn't. There's contact in the non-verbal physical realm type of contact. And so I learned that it is possible, and which I thought was mind-blowing, actually, when I saw the effects or how it was working online. And
I really enjoyed it, actually, being, I mean, I had nothing to compare it to, I guess, but I really enjoyed it being online and having that, you know, looking forward to that time that was set aside in my week where I could just shut the door, put everything else out of my mind and out of my physical space and drop in with that, with your guidance and with the group. And it still felt, I still felt a group connection. I still felt very much that I could go into all the practices. It was, I was surprised initially that it was working in that space. But then I thought it was great.
If you spoke to me 5 years ago and say, would you like to design and facilitate an online course, I would have gone, no. I'm all right, thanks. That sounds crap. So it's really funny how that's, I've completely changed my mind about online courses, therapy, counselling, coaching. It's just changed.
I mean, everything's changed for lots of people now, right? Like everybody can work in that realm so much more easily now. The whole paradigm shifted in that sense, I think. Remote working. But so are you still doing it in an online sense? Are you doing it in person now?
Yeah, I continue doing it online. And one of the magical things about teaching online is that so many people join from across the globe. And that, for me, is so beautiful. You're learning about different cultures, a person's history. I've had people join from India, Mexico, Finland, Switzerland. Wow. Like, and to learn about how do they connect to their body? What blocks do they have? How do they relate to a season? It's going to be so different. And so having these different types of histories and wisdom in the pot is just like, wow, it's so gorgeous. And that's why I wanted to continue doing them online. So, you know, although I've designed this course and I'm facilitating this course, I'm not the leader. I mean, I say that at the beginning of the course, as you know already. You know, I know a little bit about these things, and this is why I do what I do. I have certain skills, but ultimately, you know your body way better than anyone in the whole entire universe. I'm not here to tell you how you should be in your body. And so when people come and they have all these different experiences about their body, we're learning from each other. You know, what works for one person is going to be different to someone else. And that is something that I really love and believe in is, okay, these are some exercises that we have, experiments.
It's the spirit of invitation, really, yeah. Isn't it? And I really like that because it's kind of like, it's everything that you're offering, it's not, when you're introducing stuff, you're not kind of saying, and I'll be watching, and if you're not doing it, you know, bad marks, and you won't finish the course with a big tick and a certificate. It's like, you know, the whole point is to listen to your body. So if you're sharing an exercise and it's like, do this and then we're going to do this, but somebody's body's going, nah, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they can choose to listen and respond to that appropriately, you know, I'd imagine that's what you want in a way. Obviously, these things are designed for people to help people, but at the same time, they're learning to listen to their intuitive wisdom about how they should move and things like that as well. So it's, I guess it's a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And creating that fertile ground to learn and to feel safe together is so important to me when I'm creating any space, actually. And so when that space is created, those foundations where we can feel relaxed in our body, in our nervous system, that's when we can experiment. That's when we can play. Mm-hmm. And play in that, not always really loud and rambunctious play or rough and tumble play, but it could also be that gentle play, the exploratory and wide-eyed, soft at the edges kind of play. And that's how I see the body knows. And also all my different types of workshops that I do. So the body knows is about learning about your unique body, right? In learning to listen to these parts of yourself. But to get to that place is creating the structures in place so people can do that. Because some people have never even tuned into their heartbeat before, you know? So it's, we come in at different abilities and maybe abilities is not the right word.
Sensitivities?
Actually. Yes. Yeah, great. Yeah. Different sensitivities, backgrounds and this kind of
thing. Yeah. So let's rewind a little bit, and I'd like to maybe, because you hear this word somatics now quite regularly, and in association with bodywork from a therapeutic context, from a kind of in all sorts of contexts, and it feels a bit like it's a bit of a buzzword of the moment, but also it feels like it could mean lots of different things depending on how it's used. So how, for your work and what you do and your what you've learned over your years of study and training, how does that word fit into your worldview of working with the body? What does somatics kind of mean to you?
So I first came to this word somatic, or learn about this word, was through my training as an actor and dancer and performer. And so somatic, the word means, well, derived from the Greek word soma, meaning in the body. And so that's what it means sort of in a nutshell, meaning in the body. It's like a fancy word for feeling what's going inside us. And that could be your heartbeat, your belly rumbling, the feeling of that shiver going over your spine, and then it might go drop into the felt sense and the feeling of grief in the body, or happiness or joy. So ultimately the word somatic means the sort of inner sensations. But how I, to connect it to my worldview and how I came to somatics, as I said, was through through acting, dance, training as an actor, and because our bodies is our instrument, we had to deeply learn about what this means to us and how we move and deeply understand ourselves. And what I'd learned about my training as an actor and a dancer is that it's an embodied psychology. And so often this word would be used at school, at drama school, somatic, and that's how it got introduced to me.
So when you were growing up, was acting and drama your kind of your first love, or is that the first kind of calling that you got in terms of like, oh, I want to do this, or that was the, is that what drew you to that, to those kind of, to get involved with those things first, or are we going further back? Was there something else that you were like when little Danny was growing up, was she like, I'm going to be an actor?
No.
No.
No, yeah. I've always been a silly, playful kid. I remember dressing up as my mom.
That's great.
She had loads of 80s gear in her wardrobe, and she's a very glamorous mummy, right? And so she'd be sat down watching the TV with my stepdad. And I would go upstairs, rummage through all her stuff, and I would put my lipstick on really outrageously. It was like a drag version of my mom. And, and I would come down and she'd like to pout, you know. And I'd come down and then just display myself in front of the TV and just do impressions of my mom. And yeah, and they allowed me to do that. They enjoyed it. And so... But I never thought I wanted to be an actor. Like, none of my family are actors or in the performing arts. But I liked making my close members of my family laugh. It's something that I enjoyed. And my mom is naturally playful.
Okay.
And both my parents love to dance. My dad actually was a semi-professional footballer for a while. My mom was interested in ice skating. She was also a model for a while. And she got really into her fitness. She loved aerobics and still does. And she'd be that person in the aerobics gear, you know, with like the brightly covered.
Or the light
covered. Yeah, 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 yeah. And she could do like 50 chin-ups.
Whoa.
Yeah, honestly. Wow. It was unreal what the things that she could do. So both my parents were playful.
Physical.
Very physical, yeah. But yeah, but acting, well, the idea of being an actor wasn't really in my, yeah, never really thought about it. I did dance classes, tap and ballet. However, I was quite frustrated by them.
Okay.
I didn't really like the structure.
The form and everything's very, I mean, ballet is very form, isn't it?
Yeah. So I did it. But I kind of wanted to fling my limbs around a bit more.
Yeah.
I remember me and my brother did disco.
What, as a class?
Yeah.
Wow. With your brother, that's great. Yeah.
My brother actually loved it, but I hid under the table. And I remember that just yesterday, actually. And so it didn't quite work. And I loved swimming. Love swimming. I did swimming galas and I was actually pretty good.
So your relationship with the physicality of your body has been there from a young age?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I recently found out that my great uncle taught Irish dance as well.
Wow.
Which I didn't know. My nanny told me, my 93.
What, like Kaylee? Traditional.
Yes, yeah. And I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. Which, yeah, I was like, where's that come from, Nan? He didn't tell me this. Yeah, he taught it in Belfast, which was a really lovely thing to know, actually, because I love movement. I love the movement arts and dance expression. So I was like, oh, it's in my ancestors somewhere, you know.
Mm, so, yeah, totally.
So that was lovely to know. But why I came to acting professionally and became interested in the arts, the contemporary arts particularly, was actually because I found school really difficult. I was always moving around, getting told off, talking, I was always late. I was bored and frustrated at school. I particularly enjoyed PE and the more sort of creative lessons, I felt like the teachers were kinder and more supportive.
Where you're not just sat at a desk with a task that's it.
Yeah, exactly. I find it so hard. And so as a kid, when you're finding these certain classes so difficult and not getting any further with it, or you're not getting any praise, you're just going to feel rubbish. You're going to feel sad. And so when, so I remember watching people on TV, particularly women, and see how confident they were. It's like, wow, they can speak so confidently. I want to be able to do that. And I remember when I was in year four and we had to bring in an object or a pet and do a presentation about them. And I brought in my pet rats.
Wow.
Yeah, my pet rat. Oh, no, I brought one pet rat in called Lucy. And I wrote about her and we had to, no, I was in year six. And we had to speak in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And have this presentation.
In the class or?
The whole year.
The whole year?
Yeah, the whole year.
Wow.
And I remember being petrified and, you know, shaking as I'm speaking in front of everyone. I remember this feeling came over me that I want to get over this. I don't know what it was, but, and even though I found it terrifying, I felt sick after. So I want to be able to do this. And I don't know what I need to do, but yeah. So there was something in me that wanted to get over this block, this fear. I used to have a stutter as well. I used to find it difficult to speak. My nervous energy was quite, I was going to say all-encompassing, but it was just around me. And I struggled with anxiety and social anxiety, but there was something that I wanted to work through it. So there was that part. And also another reason what drew me to the arts as well, it was a place where I felt I could explore, I felt safe to experiment. And so when I was 16, I left school and went to a contemporary performing arts college.
Oh, wow.
And decided to go there. And I continued to be mischievous. And there was a reason for that. And I know my mom won't mind me saying this, but she wasn't available for me or my brother for a little while. She struggled with alcohol addiction. And so she wasn't the playful, loving parent as we knew, and she wasn't be able to be there. So when I left school and went to college, it was a place where I could experiment, but I was acting out in ways I didn't properly understand at the time. But it was because I was hurting, right? I wanted my mom around or my family around.
But you were in a space that was supportive of that expression.
Which is
amazing.
Yeah, right. And I didn't know I had dyslexia at this point either. And so I was in a space where learning through my body and expressing through my body was supported and celebrated. And I felt at home. I was like, wow, this is where I can, this way of learning, this way of this intelligence is celebrated here. And so I learned about practitioners like Isadora Duncan, Jack LeCocq, Stans Laski, Mary Wigman. Oh my God, Mary Wigman is just a brilliant, hilarious lady. I say hilarious. I'm sure, it's Mary Wigman. I'm sure it is, who did the witch dance. And I remember watching this video of her from like the 1920s or 30s. And she's on this stage and she's sat down and she's got a cloak on and there's these like drums going boom, boom, boom. And she's got this face and she's just going and she's performing the witch dance and she's like stomping on the ground and she's like moving on her bum and she's like bum, 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 bum. And she got stoned off stage. Wasn't supported. It was like, this is strange. What are you? You're a witch. You're a weirdo. But she continued, not actually like stoned. People throw things at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like.
As in get off.
Yeah, yeah.
We hate this.
Yeah. What are you doing? You're a freak. You're strange. But she continued.
What era was this?
I think it was the 1920s.
Right.
Or the 1930s.
So it would have been considered very out there for the time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Don't quote me on that year, but it was around about that time. I remember watching that and I just thought, wow, there's just this feeling and this expression on stage. And although the audience didn't like her, she wasn't there to be liked. She wasn't there to be congratulated, actually. She was like, this is how I'm feeling. This is my expression. I want to break free. I want to break free of the shackles of what you believe I am.
The confidence in that is amazing. The self-belief.
Yeah. I'm calling it the witch dance.
Yeah.
I was just in awe and just like, yeah, seeing people and practitioners like that. I was just like, wow, this is how people can share themselves in the world. And I felt understood, actually. Mm. So part of me suddenly felt understood.
So this is when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
As part of your college courses, you did they show you these things, or were you just like finding them out? I guess they taught me.
Yeah, they taught me about what devising means. They taught me about physical theatre. I learned about Deviate, which is an awesome theatre company, which I recommend anyone to look them up. Strange Fish is particularly very cool. I didn't know theatre could be like that. I didn't know that was a thing. I wasn't interested in musical theatre. I thought it was cheesy and crap. However, slightly different now. I actually quite enjoy it now. It's lovely. It's fun. But at the time, I was like, no, it's stupid. But yeah, learning about those types of practitioners and how story can be anything. And I remember one of the shows that we did, I can't remember the name of it now, but there was a piano on stage. Someone was lying, draped themselves over the piano, and that got pushed onto the stage while pouring sand on the ground.
Brilliant.
And then a row of us started to walk on stage with these like plastic perspex, maybe? Is that what it's called? And we had that. So as we kind of walked on stage, like in line, and just all looked at the audience, and then we kind of raised up the plastic perspex thing. And then we started kissing it, and we all had red lipstick on.
Oh,
and all the lipstick just kind of got all like smudged all around it. And I can't even remember what the meaning was behind of all this thing, but I just loved it. It was just like...
It didn't matter.
It was just kind of breaking up the human experience. And, you know, it makes me think of Picasso and doing cubism. Is that what it's called?
Cubist.
Cubism? Yeah.
Cubanism? Cubism.
Yeah. I don't know.
My art history is not amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Me neither.
Yeah.
But how we sort of deconstructed and sort of zoomed in on parts of what art is, it felt like that. And it was just so much fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And that was a group of people that were all learning together and exploring and finding out who they are at the same time. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, it was great.
So where did that lead you? Like, did that, after that, you were like, okay, I want to do more of this. This is cool. I'm enjoying this.
Well, I left college and I didn't complete that diploma. And that was partly to do with what was going on at home. It was a bit tricky time. My stepdad left us, and that was strange because he was someone that was around for a long time. My parents divorced when I was about 3, and he was a good man, really so patient. He would sit with me for hours of my maths homework and help me work through stuff, and I didn't get it and I'd get upset. And he wasn't there anymore. Something was going on between my mom and my stepdad, and that was hard, and it hurt me a lot. And my bio dad, we would see him, and he was around, and he had he also has 2 other children who I love dearly, with my stepmom. But there wasn't the foundation of trust and support and connection there for me to speak to him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he did offer. I remember him. Well, I actually find it really difficult to talk to anyone about what was going on with my mom. Mm. My older brother was there too, but I don't want to talk about his story and his experience, just to respect him as a human. So when I did finally tell my dad, it was difficult for everybody. But people didn't believe me what was going on at home at first.
Mm.
But my dad actually offered for me to stay with him, but I just wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm out of here. I'm gone. And I moved into a hostel. I just wanted to be away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that I stayed in touch with the most was my grandparents, who have been a consistent support of love, joy, warmth, and still are. They are 93 and 95 now.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, I'm really close to my grandparents. Yeah. So that's what happened when I first left college. So that was difficult and strange and challenging and weird time. But then, yeah, I was finding myself trying to find places to live. I was homeless sometimes. I found myself in really strange bedsit situations, which were both terrifying and awkward and silly. And then eventually when I was 19, I went back to college and went to Wolverhampton. And the reason why I went to Wolverhampton is because my first boyfriend was living there. And I had my first boyfriend at 18. Yeah.
That's funny, because that was the local, when I was growing up, that was the local town where we went to gigs and things.
Really?
Civic Hall, oh yeah, Wolverhampton.
Oh dear.
Wolfen Hall. Lots of, so many memories for me down that way.
Did you ever go to Royal London?
To where?
Royal London.
No.
That's a really cool, probably like the only cool bar in Wolverhampton.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a rule.
We didn't really go to the bar. I think there was a couple of pubs we went to, but it's mostly just we went there to like buy records or go to gigs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's Wolverhampton.
It's not the best city.
There's not loads going on these days. It's a bit better.
Is it really?
I don't speak too badly of it, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I went to New Hampton Arts Centre and they were doing a diploma in performing arts there, but it was very different to the first one that I went to. There were more musical theatre stuff. So that was an interesting experience.
So you went from ripping your face on a piece of glass to...
Yeah, literally. And I did it kind of stubbornly, but I was glad to be there. You know, I just wanted to be around those people again. And actually had a great experience. I met one of my oldest friends there who I'm still friends with now.
Brilliant.
And I actually got one of my first roles in a feature film there.
Really?
Yeah.
What, so they came to the place to look for people to cast?
Yeah. The British Youth Film and Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to different colleges around the north and in the Midlands. And I got a role, and the film's called, I think it's called Re-Evolution. I think I'm saying that right. But yeah, and I was petrified. I struggled really badly with nerves, even though it's such a weird feeling, like, I want to be in the arts, but I'm terrified of being seen.
It's such a common story, though. It's such a common story, so especially weird with creative people, because there's this real battle between wanting to do the practice that you love and then... having to perform sometimes, especially early on, is like when I was learning drums as a kid and I was in a band situation and the music teacher was like, please come and play at the music evening, you know, we love it, come and play at the school music evening. I was like, no, never, no, I'm never performing in front of anyone, I hate it, I'm not doing it. And she was like, oh, okay, but I just wasn't ready, you know. It took another couple of years before I was like, people think it's cool when you're in a band, and like, if we go and do this, like, yeah, you know. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something in this performance business.
It's so interesting.
But it does still, there is still a dichotomy, isn't there, sometimes, like, because it's so, a lot of creative-minded people can be very, really value their own space and their own time, and they're kind of just to themselves, and then you have to, like, flip it and go out on a stage where everybody's looking at you or something, you know.
It's which isn't normal, right? Well, how our bodies react to that is normal. Now, having all these eyes looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our animal bodies are like, what the hell? I'm going to run.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight you.
Is this good or is this really dangerous?
Yeah. What do I do here? And then, so it's such a strange feeling, which is good because our bodies are working properly to respond to that. But as a performer, it doesn't always help.
Yes, totally.
So learning about, you know, how to channel your nervous energy. And
then going back to what you said earlier about how when you're younger and, you know, there was something that was telling you, I want to push, I want to get through this. I want to like, I know I can work through this, or there's something here that's that inner drive almost that wants to push you to kind of challenge you and overcome stuff that's difficult for you. That's that's a really key piece of internal architecture.
Yeah, you know. I love that.
Yeah, I don't know. That just came to my head.
Genius.
Yeah. So I guess you were able to cultivate that side of things, you know, to perform. So what were you doing in the film? What did they cast you
as? I was one of the lead actors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. It was such a, when I reflect back at that time, it was a transformational experience for me. I was petrified, and the rehearsal directors were incredible. I remember it was very intense, and the teachers and the facilitators that were supporting the lead cast were training at Central School in Speech and Drama. So it was also like a learning experience for them, and they were already sort of directors in their own way. And so it was the first feeling of like ensemble and intently working on a project and connection, and through an embodied sense, and learning things like Meisner technique and voice work. And wow, it was incredible. And I remember this one exercise. So I used to, and still do, parts of me still do fear this, is singing, right? Singing a song. I remember this one thing that we're doing together as an ensemble, and we had to spinal roll down, like you do in a yoga, spinal roll back up, and just go, really simple, right? It's about a vocal, it's from Alexander technique. I couldn't do it. I was crying, and I just
because
couldn't.
Of the vocal part of it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was just stuck, and I had a lot of problems with this part of me, actually. Mm. A lot of tension here. Mm. Now I understand that it's a trauma block. I also suffered with nodules around this part of me, and now I know that things like humming and different vocal exercises really help me here. I didn't know that at the time. Mm. And I remember my director, he was the acting director, and it was very intense, but he could see that there was something in me that wanted to work through it. Mm-hmm. And he was there at the side of me and was asking me to do it again and again, and in a supportive, comforting way.
Because he was experienced enough to know how to hold that for somebody who wasn't, I guess.
Yeah, and that's really delicate work because that could have pushed me way over the edge, that I got completely dysregulated, triggered, activate, whatever. Mm.
And could have been the end of your entire like involvement in that stuff, you know? Just whoa, this is too much.
Right, yeah. Because we're activating something beyond just the voice there. You know, that was like my history coming into play here, right? Mm. And trauma that I hadn't fully been able to process at the time. And on reflection, that's what was happening in these moments. I was releasing part of me. And it makes me feel quite emotional to think about it, actually, but it was so powerful. Mm. And so on reflecting of those moments and to think about and feel into where I am now, wow, the body is so, like, so wise, and embodiment techniques, somatic techniques is so powerful. And there was an unblocking happening there.
It was exactly what you needed by the sounds of it.
Yeah. And so that kind of gave me more confidence, and like something was letting go. And like, I remember when I'd go onto set and I'd have to, and there's a reason why I'm not saying their names, just so to protect their privacy and stuff. But I remember I'd go up to my acting director, and he'd have to be on set with me because I'd be so nervous. And I'd get really sweaty hands, and he'd give me his shoulder and arm, and I would wipe my hands down him. And he was like my cloth, you know, like wipe my hands, and then I'd go back on set.
Sweet.
Yeah. It was so supportive. But just to caveat that, that's where sometimes the relationship with an actor and the director can be quite sensitive, in that there can be a misuse of power, a misuse of trust mm-hmm. in those environments. And I don't know if I want to go into that right now today, but
yeah,
there's the reason why in those environments with actors and directors where it can be very uncomfortable. And as I said, it can be abused. Actors can be abused in those environments because there's this trust happening. It's almost like a care, a parental figure there, right? And so there was something happening there, I think, too, mm-hmm. in that my folks wasn't available to me, but there was these directors that were here for me, mm-hmm. and like bringing this part of me out, and I was just 19. And so, yeah, so it's like, yes, this was really powerful, but at the same time, it was very sensitive. And
yeah, you're stepping into a very adult world of all yeah. sorts of stuff that you're only just beginning to learn mm. about and understand, or maybe not understand at yeah. the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot. It's happened to actors where, unfortunately, they have been abused because of that,
mm.
you know, because like, mm. that misuse of trust, because, mm. yeah, you're working with sensitive feelings and sensations in the body, and there's this trust happening. Yeah, it's profound and also very delicate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I guess that's something that you don't hear spoken about loads. Mm. I guess with all the kind of more recently with all the controversies of sort of like Me Too dynamics yeah. and things,
right.
we hear about that a lot more. But did you have a sense of that at the time, or it was more of a case of you were just in it? In the experience.
I was just in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just in it and experiencing and learning. But yeah, there wasn't like, oh, hold up a second. This is the dynamic that's happening with my directors. No.
No.
Yeah, absolutely yeah. not. Yeah, which again is that's very vulnerable, not knowing, you know, and when I look back at that. But at the same time, I learned a lot, and I also got a lead in the second feature film as well, which is a lot of fun. That's called The Perfect Burger.
Have you watched any of these oh back?
But the first film that I watched, right, the Re-Evolution, mate, I was squirming in my chair. my fellow actors and my directors are next to me. I was literally in knots, like, oh my God, I can't even. I remember like it was yesterday. It was so excruciating to see myself. No, I don't care.
Mm.
You just get so used to it. I get so used to hearing my voice, see myself. Some images or film looks great. Some is not so great. I'm yeah. like, this
you
is
just
me.
Let go.
Yeah, this is me, my human experience. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting journey.
Yeah.
Everyone should film themselves and watch themselves and listen to their voice and just kind of get used to it. Honestly, yeah. it's quite healing, actually.
Yeah, I remember this. I remember this a lot from being a kid, and a friend of mine. I used to go around to his house, and we'd create a radio show with a double tape recorder, and we used to have microphones, and we'd do like, "Hey, this is Jodie and Will's show," and then we'd play little bits of music, and then I'd listen to it back and go, "Oh my God, is that what I sound like? Who's this like weird half?" Brummy-esque, like, strange kid accent. I hated it. I really hated it for a long time.
Yeah.
Hated
yeah.
the sound of my voice for a long time.
Yeah.
So doing this is kind of, like, very therapeutic.
Mm. I can relate with that. Yeah, for sure. Especially as Midlanders, Brummy mm. accent, right? My accent's changed quite a bit now.
Yeah, same. I'm not there. My parents don't live in that area anymore, yeah. you know. Yeah. So it's different. But, yeah.
I kind of miss it, you know.
Do you notice when you go and hang out with people who are still in that area that your accent changes?
Yeah.
Does that like thing where you're like, oh, I'm kind of like.
Good night, Thurman. Yeah. Good night, Bob. Yes, especially when I'm with my mum and dad. My mum and dad both live in that area still, and it will change. My partner will notice. He's Irish. He will see, feel the change. But here's the change anyway. But what made me a little bit sad recently, when I was visiting home and celebrating my dad's birthday with his friends, and who speak really, have really strong accents,
And they were like, oh, you don't even sound like you've ever been from here. And I was like, oh, oh.
Yeah.
but I am. yeah, so it felt a little bit, I don't know, like trying to run away from your accent or run away from where you're from for so long. And now coming at it from a different perspective, different feeling, different point in my life and going, oh, I kind of want to reconnect to that. I love hearing the Midlands accent now. It's part of me and who I am. Yeah, mate, I don't know if you can relate with that.
I guess I've never really thought about it in depth, but I mean, what I do really appreciate is how many accents there are in the UK for such a small country, and you can go from one end to the other, it's completely different, and sometimes you can't even understand what people are saying. That's amazing. I love the variety, and I love the way people speak and the kind of musicality of the way people speak in some places, you know. And you have to train your ear to understand the like colloquialisms and all the local slang and stuff. I love all that stuff.
Yes.
It's really fascinating too. And it really gets me, I'm like, but anyway, and what was the second film that you were saying? The Burger. That sounds like maybe we don't want to talk about it.
The perfect burger. So it was a take on, what's that show called now with the chopping of children? It's a fun, silly musical film. Tim Burton, I think it was. What was it called?
I get like that. And I'm like, oh no, I have to know what it is.
Yeah.
Because now you know that you can look it up. So you're like,
I know. God damn technology. okay. I can't remember where the take was from or the inspiration was from, but it's a fun, sort of like dark, funny comedy. And it's about how some school children get killed and put into burgers. It's very silly, very funny. It's kind of ridiculous. It was good fun to do. And I got a lead role in that one as well. And it was just a great experience. You're working with professionals. The crew were from Disney, actually. So it was just, yeah.
So is this the start of your sort of professional life as as a working person?
In the world?
Like you just went into a film opportunities from the start.
Yeah. And it's when
it's quite a deep end, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I followed my nose with that. I thought, okay, maybe I go into straight acting. Maybe it's film. That's my thing. Originally, I thought it was the contemporary arts and physical theatre and maybe circus. And
performance art.
Yeah, performance art. That's where my love is, really, if I'm honest. But I followed by nose. I'm getting offered these opportunities. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to follow this. And eventually I found myself in Manchester and went to an audition for Contact Theatre and was involved with their youth theatre company and then got my first acting agent through a show that we did. The Comedy of Errors, and it was like a take on Comedy of Errors. We did like a spoken word. I mean, Shakespeare, you could argue, is kind of like spoken word, but it was like a contemporary version of the Comedy of Errors. And then I got my first acting agent with Amber Management in Manchester, and I was 21 then, I think.
Wow! So you're just straight into that world.
Yeah, but I wasn't ready.
Mm.
I had loads of unprocessed trauma.
Yeah.
And so even though I got this role, I wasn't ready and I was struggling. Like my mental health is struggling. Mm. I was hurting. I hadn't spoke to my mom for a number of years. So it was a strange one and I didn't show any emotion. I didn't cry about it. So I was sort of numbing my body, but also at the same time feeling freeing in these sort of creative spaces. So it's kind of like a funny position to be in, actually.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And I guess at some point that has to come out, right? You have to stop and look and say, there's some stuff going on with me and I need to look at it in more detail.
Yeah. And that really didn't happen until I was about 25.
Mm.
Yeah, so Manchester had some really cool, great experiences, but it was also really challenging and hard and lonely and, yeah, being influenced by the wrong things and this kind of stuff. But I got into drama school. I auditioned. And when you're 20, so I got in when I was 23, and then I decided to go. I deferred the year and go when I was 24, and that was at East 15 Acting School. And I went, but I was still hurting. I wasn't properly there. I really enjoyed the experience too, and I met some awesome people. But the first day, or the first couple of days of going to drama school, you have to prep your journey. So you write down, well, you don't write it down. You can do it any way you want.
How long is the course? Is it a number of years? 3 years. 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you map out your life journey in whatever way you want. So it could be with a collage. Well, they actually suggest a collage, and then you go up, everyone goes up in their own time and they talk about your journey. And the turning points and the challenging parts.
As a way of introducing yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just when I think about that I think everyone should be able to do that. It's scary. But wow, just to be able to map out your journey in creatively in this way. Like some people had like a mask. Some people did it like dance or song or jokey or, you know, there's all these different ways you could do it.
And quite unusual, you know, for like people in their 20s to sort of stop and look back and go, oh, yeah, this is where I came from. You know, mostly it's very forward looking, very in the moment when you're that, when, you know, that age is like, yeah, yeah, what are we doing next week? What are we doing?
Right.
And you don't often stop and look back until you're a bit older in general, I would have thought. So that's quite cool.
Yeah. And yeah, I love that I got to experience that. And as actors, you need to understand your body, your emotions, your mind to be able to pretend to be someone else. And so that's one of the reasons why they do that. You're sort of breaking yourself down in parts and building yourself back up again. And people leave. I was one of those. Some people, you know, you do your first or second year and you go, I need a break. Some people are fine and they continue and they graduate and whatever, but I was one of those people that needed to go. It was bringing up a lot of stuff and I was like, wow, how am I even gonna something in the way? And there was, I remember the thought, it was in my head, I thought, I don't want to just coast at the back here when I'm at this prestigious drama school and it's really hard to get into. You only have a number of people that go. I don't want to waste this opportunity. So I left. And another reason why I left is, which I haven't mentioned yet, but I was struggling with an eating disorder for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
First noticed it when I was probably about 8. Which, 8.
Wow, yeah, that is young. Yeah.
So strange. It was the feeling of insecure about my body, my legs.
Okay.
I remember. And yeah, so I was dealing with that, and that was a way, it was a vice, right? It was a bit of a vice. Is it Gabo Mate or Peter Laverne who talks about, I can't remember which practitioner it is now, but this idea when a vice comes, it comes to a moment to help us and support us in a time of crisis. And so rather than sort of seeing these vices as like wrong, bad, or evil, they were there to sort of help us and they served its purpose.
Yeah, I've heard Gabo Mate talk about Gabo Mate. That.
And that really helped me actually to see it in that way of like, okay, this is not serving me, but it was trying to, you know, and that's also what happened to my mum. She was in a time of crisis and she found her vice and it was helping her numb her feeling because her feeling was too hard.
Yeah, it's a very compassionate way of looking at things, right? It's like very much heart. Centered,
right?
Let's look at this from a place of love, I guess.
Right, exactly. And hadn't spoke to my family about it was very much a secret. And yeah, I was struggling really hard. I remember being in Morrison's in Loughton, big up Morrison's in Loughton, and I had all these vitamins and all these vitamins I held in my arms to try and, I don't know why I wanted them. They were trying to replace food, probably. Mm-hmm. I was looking around Morrison's. I had them all. And I remember going to the pharmacist in Morrison's. And I was asking him, the pharmacist, for advice. And he looked at me. He's like, why are you taking these? And I reacted. I was insulted. Like, I was like, how dare you?
He pressed the button.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. Went right in. And I didn't know what to do. And I was like getting all dysregulated. I was in my stress response. And I walked away and I was going to complain about him. And I went to a member of staff and this woman. And she looked at me. She was like, what's wrong? And I just looked at her and I dropped all the vitamins on the floor and I broke down and she just hugged me. She just held me and I just continued crying in this woman's arms. I still to this day don't know who she was.
Wow.
Or her name. And then she kind of pulled me back and she's like, it's going to be okay. And that.
What an angel.
Honestly, it was... And I wish I could go back to that person and speak to them and be like, wow, thank you. But I was so like, and from that experience, I then called my mum and I hadn't spoke to her for a really long time. I just thought she was the only person I could speak to. And this, bearing in mind, she'd come out of rehab. She nearly lost her life. And she came out the other side. And I thought, yeah, you're the person I need to speak to.
Mm-hmm.
You're the person I need to speak to now. And yeah, I remember calling her up and I broke down and she was asking me what was wrong. And I just told her, I was like, I need help. I need support. And it sort of was the other way around, right? There was moments where I felt like I was her parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was holding her in my arms and then it changed and she could be there for me. And yeah.
Wow.
That was big. That was like a big thing to have that conversation with her. And I left London. I moved in with my mum. I reconnected with my family better. And yeah, there's... So to come to this idea of play, and there's a reason why I want to say that now. I remember when I moved back home with my mom and it was challenging. It wasn't easy. It was really triggering in moments, but it was also really healing. And me and my mom are like the bestest friends now. We're really close.
Oh,
yeah. Beautiful. And but I remember sitting on the toilet every morning, reading Great Expectations out loud in funny voices to my mom. And...
Yeah.
And I read the whole book. It was the first time I read like a big book because I thought as a...
They're serious literature books as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Dickens.
Yeah, exactly. And what I was learning that when I'm reading out loud and doing funny voices, this is how I can read. I never thought I could read apart from plays and stuff. I didn't think reading was for me because I have dyslexia. I just thought, this isn't... But then I found this way of reading and entertaining my mum. And it was so healing.
Mm.
And just finding this joy and in this moment of crisis. And I went off like antidepressants and had talking therapy and be moving my body a lot. And it was just intuitively... coming back to movement, which has always been a huge part of my life anyway. And I started recording myself actually every morning, my movement.
As in video?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And journaled with it.
Ah.
I called it my moving body.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't know why. I mean, I do know why. I just became curious about healing for the body and the meaning of the body. And
yeah, it was something therapeutic for you. Yeah. So you wanted to document what was going on.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And I would write down the words that would come up from that experience. And I was just curious, I guess.
Mm.
And because I took like a sabbatical away from work and stuff, I had this year of, okay, I just need to come back down to basics, you know. And so it gave me this freedom and space to self-inquire in this way. And I always remember my movement teachers from drama school and the different colleges that I went to and used the tools and the practices that they taught me to work through nervous energy and feeling dysregulated, remembering those that they're there for me. Particularly remember Fabian, my anatomy teacher at East 15 Drama School. Big up, Fabian. I loved him. He was so gentle and beautiful man, and I really loved learning from him. So yeah, there was these tools that came into place where they became tools for my healing journey to the body.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, isn't it, how often times when we've been through a lot of challenging experiences along the way that we end up doing work, sharing that, you know, the work that we end up sharing is something that we've, I think when people, well, I guess what I'm trying to say, the kind of the experiential side behind, you learn in a really hard way about connecting to your body and connecting to play, and you, it took you through like all sorts of like incredibly difficult experiences by the sounds of it. The fact that you and others who've been through difficult life circumstances are able to alchemize that into something you can then share, and it becomes your work and it becomes your life. That's so beautiful. I love that. I really love that. And you can see, like, it's fascinating, like, people who've done work with you and people who've done all sorts of things with you, they won't necessarily know any of this. But no, to see the, like, to join the dots, this is why I love having these kind of conversations, because you can look back and go, here are the dots. These are the things that I went through. These are the things that I learned in these particular circumstances. And now here I am and I'm offering this, and this is what I do. And I'm helping people with my own understanding, drawn from my own experience, you know. I commend you for doing that, because it's brave. You know, it's brave to take all that, what has been so difficult, and turn it into something that now you're thriving and doing.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. Thank you. Yeah. And I think coming out the other side of these experiences and now in a place that I'm sort of like open, out, can hold, there's something about giving back in some way, or sharing the power of somatic healing, embodiment, play, the arts, how everyone's an artist, everyone. Don't have to be an artist isn't just the ones that went to drama school or music school.
Or when people say, oh, I'm not creative, I don't really, and then you're kind of like, well, how about do this, how about you could do this, try and be an animal and dance around and like,
and I think that might be something to do with, oh, it must be something, must be the masterpiece, it must be this sort of like ladder, right, this escalator of must be. And another reason why I'm no longer a professional actor and I'm not in that world, because the reason why I liked it was because it was enjoyable and playful and expressive and free, but the more you kind of go up this ladder, it's like
the pressure, the industry, the kind of egos and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's not fun. In fact, it feels disembodied.
Right. Yeah.
Feels like the opposite. And I do wonder if that's why some folks feel like, oh, I'm not creative, or I can't do those things because, oh, I'm not trained in a thing, or I didn't go to that class and must be it. And it's like, there's no outcome. Doesn't need to be a goal. Just being with it in the moment. And that's what play is, right? Or free play. It's just being in the moment. I also think of the Tao. If you think about the Tao, speak about the Tao, you're no longer in the Tao. and that's like play.
Yeah.
You start thinking about play, or the outcome of play, or the rules of play. You're probably not playing anymore.
I mean, it's why we look to children often, isn't it, and animals as teachers of play and things, because they're not self-conscious in the same way that adults are, because we grow up and we're like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
The kids are just like, nah, just do it.
Yeah.
And doesn't care.
Yeah.
Zero fucks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from my what I've learned about play and how I've studied play from a different lens, from a different a different avenue, is that usually when someone's feeling a block with play, creativity, movement, voice, music, drawing, whatever, it's usually resulted in some sort of trauma a person's experienced in their life, right? And so when we practice play or creativity, it's learning to be safe again in those realms, and step by step, gently does it to sort of bring those parts of ourselves here again. And this is for me,
yeah.
This is to play. This
especially when you've not done it for so long and you're sort of conditioned out of not giving a shit about what people think, because most people do give a lot of shits about what people think as adults in the world today. Like you say, I guess there's a deep vulnerability to being able to go back into those spaces, and it's like a relearning of what it's like to play and to not have agendas and you know, all that stuff that comes with a developed mind. So sensitivity and holding those spaces really key.
100%. Things like play and rest in the Western world, at least, aren't seen as important or necessary.
Would be understatement.
Absolutely. And part of the reason maybe we live in a disembodied world, because we're not making space to play, we're not making space to rest, and remembering that the importance of those things. I mean, don't get me wrong, I can also forget to play and forget to rest sometimes, because I'm living in the UK and in a place where it must be doing or love the time. So it's a rhythm that I'm used to.
It's society's general theme, right?
Like
push forward, productivity.
Yeah.
What are you doing next?
You know,
actually, I'm going to lie down for most of today. That's how I'm going to, you know, people don't say that enough.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And what's helped me and also my clients and remembering to play and remembering to rest is to have a little mini toolkit. You know, for example, how we began this podcast with the pleasure to orientation practice. Just putting that into your day, a couple of minutes a day, is reminding us to come back to the body, come back to presence, come back to our breath, orientating to those little pockets of joy in the room that you're in, and not necessarily a massive like catharsis of joy, but just like, oh wow, that the flicker of light that I can see, and that little, that the beauty in the simplest things. That little tool is brilliant for something like that, to remembering to come back to a little bit of play, a little bit of rest. I think is important.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a growing sense again of that with the kind of, sometimes it's the way that things go where they go towards one extreme and then people are like, no, there's a mental health crisis and the Western capitalist society's broken and we need to, you know, we recognize that we live within these structures, but we need to pull the balance back. And then, you know, one of the wonders of technology and people being able to share their work freely and widely is the amount of resources that are available now, you know, and often at very little cost to access. You know, most people in the world have smartphones now and can look at videos and watch YouTube, and, you know, the access to somebody sharing a 10-minute video or something like that, is the resources are much more widely available than would ever have been in the past.
Right.
But so it's kind of like, Yeah, it's always paradox. It's always a paradox. Like, we live in this technologically focused society, but equally there's a lot of the tools that we need to help us live within it, existing within that framework.
Yeah, right. It's quite confusing sometimes.
Isn't it? It's weird.
It's like, I don't want my phone anymore, but also it's really helpful. And I've got this meditation app that I can just click on.
Yeah.
Helps me,
Yeah.
Or people with disabilities, you know, we mentioned.
Can't necessarily go to physical classes.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. So it can feel a little bit like you win like a juxtaposition, kind of like, and this boat, how can they coexist actually? How can these things coexist together? And this, rather than like, I'm living the woods and I'm against everything and like, F you, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm going to live in my little treehouse in whatever.
That is the challenge of the world we live in, right? It's like, how do we just... And it just seems to me to be a case of more and more awareness, more and more self-aware we can be of like, right, how am I feeling? Mm. What do I need? The more we can keep checking in with that and then access the tools that we need to, or not, or switch everything off.
You know? Yeah, I mean... Don't get me wrong, having a no phone day is brilliant. It can be hard. I can only speak about from my own experience. I can see you nodding. You're like, yes, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, just going, okay, I'm going to have a no phone day today. It's going to go over there and I'm going to just be with my physical world. But what helps me with a no, nearly knocked the mic there, sorry. What helps me with a no phone day is maybe writing down a little couple of things to do just in case I have that habit, that addiction of wanting to check my phone. And that could be, okay, at 12 o'clock, I'm going to dance to one of my favourite songs. At 4 o'clock, I'm going to doodle for 4 minutes.
Nice.
Something like this, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or at 6 o'clock, I'm going to go for a walk in the woods. And that I have a bit more flexibility in my days because I'm self-employed. But for anyone that's maybe has less flexibility, I think there is still some space in the working day. In the lunch break, okay, I'm going to doodle or I'm going to find it somewhere else to like dance in the space somewhere else in private. Or maybe it's just a little movement of the shoulders, you know, a little hand dance. Maybe it's with your work colleague rather than looking at the phone and creating a little bit of movement.
Mm.
You know, movement. What did my mom say to me today? If you don't move it, you lose it, or something like that.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Don't use it, you lose it. And she's referring to movement.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, right. I was having a chat with her about that today because a friend of hers is struggling with getting older. And he was like, just tired of getting older now. And my mum just said, move your body in whatever way that feels good. Move your body. Either going to the gym, a dance class at the gym or yoga or something, long as you're moving. And I was like, yes, Mum.
Yeah.
I was talking to her today and I was like, yeah. I loved hearing her say that. But yeah, just having some movement, but having a no phone day and having a little list of some things in place where you'd usually look at your phone, that helps loads.
Yeah, totally. Oh, thanks for doing that. That's great. Those are the kind of things that, you know, like the phone thing, I need a reminder of that as much as the next person. It's such a easy thing to slip into an unconscious habit.
Yeah, 100%.
And resetting that is important.
Yeah, yeah. If you could do it longer than a day, that's even better. It's like a retreat away from your phone.
Yeah, and it's also great if you're trying to work on any kind of creative project. Yeah. It's such
Yes.
Yeah, it makes such a difference.
Mm.
So Danny, I know you do lots of wonderful different things and you teach in person, you teach all over the place that we touched on at the start. What are you doing this year? What are you offering this year online, in person? If anyone who's listening is like, would like to work with you, how can they engage with you in your work?
Yeah, I do in person and online, and the Body Knows will continue to thrive and be online. The next 6-week course The Body Knows Immersion. It starts on the 8th of March.
My birthday.
Is it really? Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely. Oh, great. Yeah, so just to explain a little bit about what The Body Knows is, and maybe you could say a little bit about it as well, seeing as you experienced it, if that feels good.
Rack my brain.
Yeah. So there's six pillars now to The Body Knows. And the first pillar is sense. Second one is play. Rewilding. Pleasure. Rest. And integration. And each one of these pillars, I share techniques, interventions, games, exercises, discussion, relating to that theme. And it gives people the opportunity to try out different exercises within a low-risk, safe environment. So what I mean by that is, for example, I may invite you, Jodie, to imagine something that's 3 out of 10 irritating, stressful, a bit annoying.
Like a drill in the background of a podcast.
Yes, exactly. That. And so if I were to guide you into a feeling of body fullness, now I say body fullness instead of mindfulness because I really love that term. Mm. Side note, it's from Christina Caldwell by the book called Body Fullness. Would really recommend that one to people. It's great. So if I were to guide you into a feeling of body fullness, come into your imaginal world, and to think and feel into this irritating thing, 3 out of 10, max 4. That is the tool, the low stressor tool, to practice with a technique, right? To practice with a body, an embodiment technique, a somatic intervention, to see how it works for you, to see if it fits. So a little example of one is called concrete feedback. I think it might be renamed now. This particular exercise is from a friend, colleague and teacher of mine called Rachel Blackman, also a legend. She was a teacher at the somatic school. And her experience with this is actually from acting training too. Anyway, so that's the low stressor. And then you would imagine a someone or something that has a soft, soothing, comforting or supportive presence. And that could be a deity, could be an animal, it could be a god, it could be a person that you know, and that person to come in whilst this irritating thing is happening and then come back to the irritating thing and seeing how it feels now while this supportive presence is there. Maybe they've imagined them putting a hand on your shoulder or somewhere that feels comfortable. That's an example, right? Mm. I haven't guided it in a proper format, but having these two things in place is how we can practice. And then we can practice how they are as a group and we come into a discussion, see how it feels. We may do it again. So the course, The Body Knows, we set the foundation with sense, and that's tuning into our senses, understanding what the word somatic means, where it's come from, and a chance for us to connect and share. And there's also a ritual involved, places to sort of dream, and connect with one another, share our wisdom. But one thing I would say it's important to note, The Body Knows is not a replacement for therapy. It's therapeutic, but it's not therapy. And so I would say if anyone wants to come and join and you are having therapy at the moment, check in with your therapist first. It can actually work well alongside therapy sometimes, but I would say check in with your health practitioner, a health professional or your therapist before joining. And if you're really unsure, send me an email and then we can chat. But yeah, I'd love to know your experience of The Body Knows. If you remember.
Yeah. Well, it came at just the perfect moment for me, I think, because the previous 6 months had been quite a shit show of life events, one on top of the other. And I was feeling very disembodied and very distracted and just out of sorts. So what you were offering felt like it would be really helpful. I didn't really know quite how it was going to work with the online thing. But I had a sense that it would be, from the nature of it and how you described it, that it would be something helpful. So, I was fairly open-minded. I'm quite used to just trying things. And so I was able to respond. I really liked the way it felt so held every session that it, like, we started with the meditation and just like a kind of grounding. And there was like a framework and a structure, but softly. And I think I really appreciated that kind of the framework of it and the the sort of ritualistic-y sort of approach that we knew, right, okay, it's time to relight the candle, you know, we come and sit and we feel our body, and we just it was really helpful for me. And all the exercises I found some more challenging than others, but again, being in the comfort of my own space, it gave me the freedom to feel less self-conscious in a way. I guess it's different when you have the energy of somebody in your space, and you're kind of, it's a different feeling. And also there's something about, I think, people who show up to these kind of things are, the very fact that somebody signed up for one of these things says something about the person a little bit to me. So what I loved was the interactions between the different people in the group, and seeing the personalities and seeing what was reflected and their feedback, and that kind of like bounce back and forth was really useful. Also massively useful was the one-to-ones. That was really key for me.
Side note, each person that signs up gets a 60-minute one-to-one session with me, and that's what you're referring to.
That's what I'm referring to, and that was really really useful and really pivotal, I would have thought, in how last year unfolded. And the whole course really set the tone of the year, and I love that it is kind of, it felt really great that it was starting at the start of the year, so I could kind of tune in and when it's dark outside and, like, you know, work with my body still, but, you know, at the time of year where often we're not as much, right, you know, out and about and doing lots of stuff. We're a bit more sitting at home generally. So there was something about that felt really special. It was wonderful.
Beautiful. Thanks, Jodie. Yeah, this year I decided not to have one in January, which I have done the last few years, mostly because I was in Ireland. I'd seen family in Ireland. And what I felt, and I meditated on this, I thought, okay, no, there needs to be one in person, and the course is going to start in March. So, nice segue.
Well done.
There's going to be in-person workshop weekend in Bristol on the 4th and 5th of February at the studio where I teach classes at and do my one-to-one. So I call it my one-to-one clinic. Is at Elevate Studio in Bristol, which is nearly sold out. And so by the time people listen to this, it may have already been and gone and sold. Yeah. But that's coming up. But I plan to do that again because it's sold really well and people are keen. So that's great and that's exciting for me. And what's different about the Body Knows course and the in-person weekend one, it really depends on the individual. Some people want like a longer immersion over 6 weeks. They also have a one-to-one, 60-minute one-to-one with me. And it's a bit more space, I guess, like lengthy. And you get to contact and be with people all across the world, which is amazing, which I think I've already mentioned, which I love. And the in-person one over the weekend is like an intensive. And we're still going to be we will be doing similar practices and inquiries, but it's in person. There may be some physical contact as well. Just as the same as the longer course, it's not a replacement for therapy. It's an inquiry. It's all about coaching sort of environment. And people get a 25-minute integration call. So it's not going to be a somatic coaching session, but it gives people a chance just to integrate together for those 25 minutes, and that's going to be on Zoom. So those are a couple of things that are coming up.
I think that's really great that you're doing an online one and you're doing an in-person one for people that want to go deeper into like a group space.
Right.
You know? Yeah. You can't really do that when you're separate at home.
Yeah. So it really depends on the person is what I'm realizing is some people want to be in person, some people want to be online. As you said, like the when it's online, you're in the comfort of your own space in your home. And I get that. You know, I've had therapy online and I've had therapy in person. It's a different experience. And the same with groups, like group therapy or in person or whatever. So I think it really depends where you're at, where your nervous system is at, where your body is at, where you are in your life, what your needs are. And how just what is it that you feel that you are gravitating towards in that moment? And that could be online or in person. So those are a couple of things that are coming up right now. You'll probably see me at a few festivals, which is a different quality to the Body Knows. As you know, the Body Knows has that essence of play. That's important to me to have play as a core value in my work. Mm-hmm. But Wild Play Lab is different. And as you know, at festivals, there's already this different energy, right? It's like expansive. Very much so. People are open. It's like a dream almost. Mm. But what I love about Wild Play Lab is, yes, it can be wild and expansive and heart opening, but it's tender too. And so this idea of like still holding, have this holding here and how play, it's paradoxical, right? Play. It's paradoxical in its way that, yes, it's fun and fluffy and cute and la, 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 but also these serious shifts can happen in our psyche and in our body. And can bring up things like grief or sadness or the lack of play in someone's life and this kind of stuff. And so I know that. And so from my experience and education as a somatic coach is putting things in place where still people can feel held whilst in this sort of quite wildness that can happen. But yeah, you'll find me at a few festivals. One I know I can confirm, which is at Wilderness. And what is the date of Wilderness?
Wilderness is August, isn't it?
I feel like it's late
August, mid to late August.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah, Adam Wilder got in touch with me. Lovely man. He's the founder of Togetherness. Would recommend to check him out. Yes, you're right. The beginning of August, the first weekend in August, you'll find me there. And there's other festivals which are maybes at the moment, just making sure that dates align. So you may find me at Love Jam, you may find me at Medicine, and there's another one that I forgot what it's called.
But I'm sure you'll be posting about all this stuff on your various channels.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Which for people that don't already know or follow you are.
Yeah, they'll be out there for sure.
What are your social handles?
Oh yes. Wild Play Lab, Wild Play Lab at Facebook, Wild Play Lab on Instagram. And you can also find me on Twitter, but I never tweet, to be honest. but I'm there.
One or two is more than enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm there. And my website is going to be up and running very soon.
Cool.
Yeah, so that'll just be www.dannytonks.co.uk.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. So on that website, you'll find all the different things that I do, where I offer things, either that be at the Psychedelic Society or Elevate Studio, different corporate clients that I've worked with. You can find all my information on there.
Oh, brilliant. That's so cool. When's that launching?
Next week.
Next week. Okay. Yeah. So by the time you are listening to this, it will be available for you to check out. Brilliant. Oh, amazing. good luck with all of it.
Thank you so much.
I hope it's a good year for sharing this wonderful work.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for your time again and sharing yourself and your story. And as you sort of touched on before, I think it's really important. And I love the fact that you felt able to be open and, you know, and share things that have been difficult for you along the way and how that's informed who you are and what you do and, you know, where you are now.
You've made me feel very safe, Jodie.
Thank you
very
much.
To be able to do that. And that's part of it.
Totally. Yeah. So I really appreciate you sharing yourself and your time and your space as well.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thanks, Jodie.
Hi, it's Jodie again. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Danny Tonks. Thank you, as always, to Six Organs of Admittance for the intro and outro music, also known as Ben Chasney, and Drag City Records. And you can find his music at sixorgans.com or dragcityrecords.com. To keep in touch with me, you can follow my personal Instagram, which is Life in Fractals. To keep up with the podcast episodes, it is Lumiere's Podcast on Instagram. And you can check out my website, jodywhite.co.uk, for all sorts of other things related to the work that I do, and my book, Chimera, which is out now and available at all good online retailers and a very select few independent bookshops. It's also available on bookshop.org if you'd rather not support Jeffrey Bezos. All the links are at my website, jodywhite.co.uk/chimera. And if you really enjoyed this episode and you're thinking, hey, how can I support Jody make more of these podcasts and continue to go out and meet and talk to wonderful, interesting, inspiring people, then you can. You can go to patreon.com/Jody White and choose one of the two tiers to support me by. And if you choose to do so, my deepest thanks to you in advance. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, take good care.
We found our way.